There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, we interrupt your regular programming because the London Film Festival has interrupted our regular programming, and we demand to know why. How, you ask? By talking to the festival's programmers. We'll be speaking to Michael Blythe and Kate Taylor from the London Film Festival programming team later on the show to tell us all about what's on at this year's festival. I am joined by an absolutely capital contributor in Kelly Powell.
Hello.
While I, Sam Howlett, I'm just a mere audio outskirt. So before we hear from the London Film Festival programmers, Kelly, what are you looking forward to seeing at this year's LFF?
So one of the films that I'm most looking forward to is Noah Baumbach's new film, Marriage Story.
Yes.
Starring Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks like a story that's right up my alley. I love Bergman's Scenes from a Marriage, and I feel like this is sort of harkens back to that a little bit.
Yeah, so this is about Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson are a married couple, they have a child, and this film charts their divorce.
Mm.
And
it includes two lawyers.
Yeah.
Played by Laura Dern and, is it Ray Liotta? Yes, Ray Liotta, Laura Dern.
So good cast.
Really good cast. And he's just got a knack for finding humanity in what could otherwise be seen as maybe a banal story.
He's dealt with divorce before, hasn't he?
Yes, he has, yeah. Quite publicly, I think,
Squid and the Whale.
Well. Yes. Huh? He's gone through his own divorce.
He has.
Squid and the Whale, yes, deals with that from the kid's perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so very much looking forward to that one. And another one that I'm really looking forward to, which has had controversial reviews so far, but just makes me want to see it all the more, is Jojo Rabbit. Because I think, in my opinion, Taika Waititi can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
AKA Taika Cohen, as he was formerly known as.
Yeah, this looks really interesting.
Yeah.
So it's been described as Wes Anderson with Nazis, or like Moonrise Kingdom, but instead
with
of
Hitler Youth.
The Hitler Youth.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think depending on what you think of that sentence is where you're going to fall with this film. I've heard it's very silly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like very broadly comedic, and it does that with Nazis.
I'm in for it. I'm there. His humor is totally my humor. So I'm excited to see what he does with that story.
Well, the reaction it got at the Toronto Film Festival was mixed, I think it's fair to say. Some people loved it, some people really did not like it. And yet it went on to win the People's Choice Award, which last year went to Green Book, which won Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
Other films that have won the People's Choice Award are Three Billboards, La La Land. So it's a good telltale sign of perhaps a divisive film, but also one that's going to, you know, it's going to be a big player at upcome awards season.
Yeah.
So I look forward to seeing what the sort of wider reaction is to that.
Exactly, yeah. And one of the smaller ones that I'm looking forward to very much is The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might be going under some people's radars. But from what I've heard, I've got friends in America, and they've seen it. They said it's exquisite. It's really, really good film. And I really hope I can catch that one at LFF this year.
Yeah, definitely. That looks really interesting. And that made a big splash in America, released by A24, who always do really good work.
Yeah.
And our regular contributor, Jake, could not be here today, but he wanted to make sure we plugged some of the films he's looking forward to. at this year's LFF. And one of those is The Report, starring Adam Driver, which we've both been lucky enough to see already.
Yeah.
And we can tell you it's pretty great.
It's really good.
It's very much this kind of All the President's Men vibe, I think. And
we're getting a lot of Driver at LFF this year. Quite exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. Adam Driver's going to be have a huge presence, as well as Scarlett Johansson.
Mm-hmm.
Both yeah, of your yeah. films star Scarlett Johansson. Yeah. She's in Jojo Rabbit.
True.
So another one that Jake's wanted us to mention that he's really looking forward to is a short film by Peter Strickland, who did In Fabric that recently came out this year, and we did a whole podcast series with Peter Strickland. He's got a short film called Geo4, which has been described as two men, one locker room, and lots of D. That's how it's described in the LFF brochure.
Great.
That's how I'll describe it now. And that's a proper short, like 3 minutes, but apparently it's intense.
Okay.
And then just a couple from me. I'm really looking forward to Knives Out, the Rian Johnson film, his first film since The Last Jedi. And it looks like a big ensemble murder mystery comedy with Chris Evans, Toni Collette, Don Johnson, Jamie Lee Curtis, Christopher Plummer. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does with that. I'm looking forward to Color Out of Space, which is this really weird sounding sci-fi film with Nick Cage, which is based on a H.P. Lovecraft book about a comet with a color on it that no one's ever seen before that makes people go mad.
Oh, wow.
And I really want to see how they represent a color that no one's seen before that doesn't exist
yeah.
in a film.
Yeah. Is Nick Cage just choosing wacky projects
yes,
that are ever. Really good?
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I think that's his thing.
Mandy last year was one of my favorites.
That was at LFS last year,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then finally, I want to do a quick shout out to By the Grace of God, which is the new Francois Ozon film, which premiered at Berlin last year and got rave reviews. That is essentially the French spotlight. Mm. So it's about child abuse in the Catholic Church. It's based on a true story, a case that's still ongoing in France. And this one's very much from the point of view of the victims rather than the investigators. And it's a real sort of emotional but really engaging journey.
Well, it's the victims are the ones that are doing the investigation,
yeah,
aren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a long film, but it's done really well. It keeps you captivated all the way through, and he's got a very interesting narrative device of how he brings you through the story.
Mm.
And so I definitely think it's one to catch.
Definitely. So LFF, unlike a lot of film festivals, is open to the public. So if you do want to go and see any of the films we mention or want to have a look at the full program yourself, you can do so if you go on the BFI's London Film Festival website. So it's time now to hand over to some of the people that make LFF happen every year. That is Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe. Hi, guys.
Hiya.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. Thanks for joining us. So before we get into our chat, do you want to just tell us a bit about what you guys do for the festival and the kind of specificities of a LFF programmer?
Sure. Okay. So I'm Kate. I'm the senior programmer for the festival. And basically, it's our job year round to be constantly researching what films are going to be ready for us. So we do that by going to lots of film festivals and seeing films there, having lots of meetings with distributors and sales agents and the people who have made the films. And then, looking at submissions. So we start viewing films in January, and then we close the program in August. Mm-hmm. And each of us has different specialities, but we're a small team, so we end up looking at everything. So for example, I lead on the East Asian selection, but whenever one film is liked by one of the programmers, it always gets a second view, and then we take the two notes and have a conversation with it around the team.
And I'm Michael. I work with Kate in the program team. I'm also the senior programmer for BFI Flare London LGBTQ plus film festival. So very much interested in the kind of queer representation that we have in the London Film Festival. I also program the cult strand in the London Film Festival. So specializing in kind of horror, science fiction, fantasy work. Like Kate said, we work with a huge number of additional programmers, external programmers who specialize in certain regions of filmmaking or styles, genres, things like that. So it's very much a collaborative process. So while, as Kate said, we're a small core team, we have lots of different voices factoring into the program that we end up with.
Oh, great. And we're a few weeks off from the festival now. How are you guys feeling about, you know, your the past 12 months, you know, accumulating in the next couple of weeks?
it's very exciting. It's like we also we have to keep everything secret, so we spend a lot of time, you know, not talking to friends or family about all this exciting stuff we've got under our hats. So it's always when we announce the program, it's like this moment of relief and release, and suddenly everyone else can start talking about the films and getting excited about the films that we've been, you know, brimming with excitement about for that time. So yeah, it's just like, bring it on.
Yeah, and it's such an exciting time for us at the moment because we're just preparing for the festival and thinking about the filmmakers who are going to be here, the Q&As that we're going to host, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of re-engaging with the films almost. Yeah. You know, you spend so much time in the months coming up to it talking about the films and thinking about the films, and then you have this moment now when you can stop and you can stand back and you can look at the programme and you can think about all the things that you want to do during.
Yeah, great. Okay, so let's get into the festival then this year. So opening film is the personal history of David Copperfield. Can you tell us why that's the opening film and how that kind of sort of sets the tone for the festival in a way, how that kicks things off thematically, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it's great for us to be opening the festival with a British film.
Yep.
Really exciting for us. And Armando Iannucci, who directed the film, is obviously a name familiar to many. And I think with this, he's taken a Dickens story and done something really interesting with it. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a Dickens scholar, so he knows a lot about Dickens and he's really passionate. But he's really made something fresh and contemporary and new. And I think something that says a lot to new audiences. So I think it's a great opening because you've got a classic story, but told in a fresh and interesting way.
Great.
Dev Patel, comic timing and sense of mimicry, gives such a beautiful performance. It's really a lot of fun.
Great. And then skipping over then to the end of the festival. So your closing film this year is The Irishman, which is going to have is it the UK premiere?
International premiere.
International premiere, incredible, of the new Scorsese film. Can you tell us about that and how that will wrap things up?
Well, in 1980, Scorsese closed the festival with Raging Bull.
Yeah.
So it's nice to welcome him back. I mean, this is a film that's been a long time in the making. Obviously, an astonishing cast with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino and Joe Pesci. But it's a film in a genre that, to some extent, Scorsese helped to define.
Yeah.
And it tells the story of the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa. And I think it's going to be a really thrilling film for cinephiles, and it's a real coup to have it for the festival. We're really excited about it.
Right. So between those two films, then there's a lot for us to get through. Do you want to start by telling us about what are the films that are going to be the big crowd pleasers? Do you think what are the films that people are going to have a lot of hype around, have a lot of expectation for, and the ones that everyone's going to be talking about?
Yeah, well, there's Knives Out, which is our American Express gala, which is the new film from Rian Johnson, who made Looper, who made Star Wars, The Last Jedi. And I think people that are familiar with Rian Johnson, his work, knows how he does really interesting things with genre. Yeah. You know, he takes quite familiar genres, but really kind of upends them and does something different and new with them. And with Knives Out, he's done something like that with the kind of whodunit mystery genre. Very fun, very interesting, very exciting, and I think really original, inventive filmmaking.
Yeah.
I would say A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is one that is going to surprise a lot of people. It's Mariel Heller, who's kind of three for three now with Diary of a Teenage Girl and Can You Ever Forgive Me, which we had last year. And it's the story of Mr. Rogers, who is a TV presenter in America. But you really don't need to know very much about him. There was a great documentary about him last year, but you can go in totally blind. And he's played by Tom Hanks. And his show was very much about helping children deal with their feelings.
Yeah.
And I just caught a press screening of this in Toronto. Mm. And it's very much Tom looking at you as if you're the only man or woman in the room and basically saying to your inner child, it's okay, you're all right, just as you turned out. And you know what? Your father was probably proud of you. And this whole room was just weeping in unison. All these hardened film critics and distributors were just losing themselves. And it's a really deftly imagined film that plays with the actual format of the TV show. Yeah. So it's very formally exciting as well. It's not a kind of straight up biopic.
Okay.
And I think that one's going to really surprise people.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about doing the job that we get to do is obviously you see a lot of films, but you see a lot of films that you might not necessarily choose to watch. And for me, A Beautiful Day in the Neighbourhood is one of those films that I perhaps wouldn't have sought out to see if I was an audience member just buying tickets for the LFF. And honestly, it's one of my favourite films of the year. It is, like Kate said, it's really beautiful. I was an absolute sobbing mess by the end of it. So, you know, I think it's definitely kind of testament to this idea of like going to see things that you wouldn't necessarily normally go and see. You know, I think London Film Festival and the amount of work that we have and the breadth of films that we show, I think it's very much a time for audiences to take risks and step outside of their comfort zone.
Yeah. So, well, that's a film that I'm really interested to see how a British crowd reacts to, because it's such a, Mr. Rogers is such an American institution that never really made it over here. But as you say, I guess it's sort of a universal thing going on there.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, another film that is definitely going to excite audiences is Jojo Rabbit, which is the new film from Taika Waititi, which is very much a kind of irreverent comedy about racism, about hate, about dogma. It's Taika Waititi is in it, plays a kind of imaginary version of Adolf Hitler.
Okay.
And it's one of the most surprising imaginative films I've seen all year. I think, you know, people who know Taika Waititi's work will be familiar with how playful and how clever he is in his filmmaking. And again, this is one that does all of that, but has such emotional depth to it. It was another one that had me a kind of emotional mess by the end.
And that just won the People's Choice at Toronto, didn't it?
It did, yeah.
Which is giving it a little extra layer of sort of anticipation.
And then I'll just give one more shout out to Emma, which is our festival gala. So this is the new film from Pablo Larraín. Yep. And he has made made a few films with Gael Garcia Bernal. Mm-hmm. So he made No, which was quite a big success in the UK, and then Neruda and Jackie, the Jackie Onassis biopic with Natalie Portman. This film is basically the story of a couple, a dancer and a choreographer, and they've gone through an adoption and it has turned out very badly, and they've actually given the child back. And so we start from this point, and then the woman who's a dancer, she basically, it's about her trying to put things right, but she's this incredibly magnetic, seductive, just fascinating character, and the dance is very much central to the film. So Gael Garcia Bernal is a choreographer and works in a kind of almost like a contemporary art context. So you've got these incredible visual scenes of them dancing against something that looks like an Olafur Eliasson, you know, Tate Modern kind of son. And then she's very much into street dancing and reggaeton. And the film has this energy, which is just totally infectious. So every time in the office, when we've been getting a little bit stressed out, we've been putting on the trailer and just like feeling reinvigorated about this, really electrifying film. So Emma, I would say, is one to check.
I'm looking forward to
check.
Seeing, actually, a new Pablo Larraín. I find his works really interesting. So then what are the films that people know less about going to the festival? The ones that, you know, the smaller ones, the ones that you think people are going to really discover at LFF this year?
Sure, we've got loads of films in our official competition, which I think are real discovery films,
yep.
films by filmmakers who audiences might not be quite so familiar with,
sure.
Films that are a bit more kind of maybe low-key in how you might first assume them to be, but we've got some really exciting stuff. We've got the world premiere of the latest film from Thomas Clay, which mm-hmm. is called Fanny Lied Delivered. Thomas Clay was made a kind of controversial entrance into the film scene a decade or so ago with the great executive Robert Carmichael, made a film called Soy Cowboy a few years after that, and this new one is a period film set in the 1600s with Maxine Peake as a wife living on a farm who basically has an epiphany about her life mm-hmm. and realizes the kind of oppressive structures in which she's living in. It's a really exciting, dynamic film, very much not your typical period drama. Mm-hmm. It's very much a kind of a rebellious morality tale, if anything, and that's one that's really exciting. And another very exciting British film that we have in official competition is a debut by a filmmaker called Rose Glass. Mm. The film's called St. Maud. and it's about a young nurse who becomes a carer for a artist who is suffering from a debilitating illness,
right.
and their relationship, and it becomes increasingly clear that St. Maud's intentions are slightly what's the word, Kate? What are her intentions?
She wants to save her patient's soul.
She does. She wants to save our patient's soul. And I think what you have is a really interesting, what begins as a really interesting kind of chamber piece becomes almost a quite baroque kind of gothic tale laced in kind of horror and religious imagery. It's really, really extraordinary. It's one of the films that I knew nothing about this year before I saw it, and it took me completely by surprise, and I think audiences will love it.
Great. Mm.
And on Fanny Lie Delivered, we're screening that on 35mm, which is quite exciting. It's one of the few kind of contemporary films that we're screening on film. Another one in competition, which we're world premiering, is Rose Plays Julie. So this is from Christine Malloy and Joe Lawler, who sometimes go under the name Desperate Optimists. And they have been making really fascinating features for some time, and shorts, often with quite blurry kind of fiction, non-fiction kind of hybrid elements and a sense of reenactment. And this one is a young woman at a veterinary school, and she's been adopted and decides to go and find her mother. But then it doesn't necessarily go well. And it's a film that really plays with genre expectations
yep.
as to where it's going. It's incredibly claustrophobic. There's some beautiful architecture, and the way that our lead kind of is quite ambiguous as to her intentions and to why she's doing stuff and her responses to things. It's a really kind of creepy and quite exciting film. So yeah, Rose Plays Julie, I think, is definitely one to watch as well.
Okay, great. And you guys mentioned earlier that the process of programming the festival is like one person will see something and bring it to the team. So I'm wondering what other films that you both saw and that you really sort of championed and really pushed to the team that you really wanted to get in, you had to sort of almost fight for in a way?
Well, one film that, one thing that we can do with the festival, which you don't get to do year round because of the scale of the festival, is sometimes to play things big. So we have access to the BFI IMAX,
yeah.
which is, you know, obviously it shows IMAX films kind of year round, but we always try to put in something that would never necessarily be in there. And this year we're screening Fire Will Come,
okay.
which is a film by Oliver Lax, who made another film called Mimosas a few years ago. And in fact, it was also acting in our special presentation, our experimenter special presentation, Krabby 2562.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a film that played in Cannes, and the concept is very simple. A guy returns from prison to the Galician countryside.
Mm-hmm.
We think that he's been responsible for some pyromania, and but we're quite uncertain as to whether he actually did it or not. And it's a film very much about landscape, and again, I suppose I just really like ambiguous films where you don't know where they're going. But it's one where there's this kind of interesting sense of dread, but also of a really awesome sense of nature. Yeah, and I think that's going to look so incredible on such a big screen. So that's an exciting thing that I can't wait to see it on that scale.
Incredible.
And I think going from, you know, big scale IMAX extravaganzas, a very kind of small film that was one that I really championed and really wanted to have in the festival is a film called The El Duce Tapes, which is a documentary co-directed by Rodney Asher, who made Room 237 and The Nightmare. So, you know, he has a bit of a kind of established reputation amongst film fans. But this one is a really interesting film about El Duce, who was the singer of a kind of Seattle DIY punk band in the late 80s and early 90s called The Mentors, and they were kind of a grossly offensive shock rock punk band. And El Duce was their kind of notorious, objectionable frontman. And the film is compiled up of just hours and hours and hours of VHS footage that was shot of El Duce at the time, and is kind of pieced together to tell the story of this kind of punk provocateur, and kind of asks whether or not he was this kind of incendiary, awful man that he pretended to be, or if actually what he was doing was an act of kind of political subversion. It doesn't necessarily set out to answer that question, but I think it poses lots of really interesting ideas, and it's really beautiful to see this old archive VHS footage up on the big screen. Because I program the Cult Strand, like I mentioned earlier, and I have such a love of horror and genre cinema. So for me, there's always a kind of conversation to be had amongst the team about horror movies and kind of genre work that we show, and I'm the big champion of that work. And so for me, it's really important to find other programmers and people that we work with who share that enthusiasm with me and can talk about these kind of films and stuff. So I think, you know, there's lots of work in this year's Cult Strand that I'm super excited about. There's a film called Adoration, which is the new film from Fabrice de Wells, who made Calvaire, he made Alleluia. You know, he's made a few quite controversial kind of extreme horror genre movies. And this new one from him is kind of fits into that, but actually is going in a slightly different direction. It's a more kind of fairy tale, more subtle approach. It's kind of taking the lovers on the run thing, you know, like obsessive, destructive romance like Bonnie and Clyde or Natural Born Killers, but telling it through the eyes of two young kids. They're kind of 11, 12 year olds. It's a really beautiful film, really elegant but disturbing filmmaking, and it's a film that I'm super excited about.
I think the use of genre aspects has been something that everyone's been talking about this year, like across the board, in terms of people like Bertrand Bonello with Zombie Child, or Baccarat, which is our Dare Gala, and is a really thrilling kind of mashup of all sorts of genres. And then there's things like Atlantics, which is the Matty Diop film in first feature competition, which many people might know Matty Diop as an actress. She's collaborated a lot with Claire Denis in 35 Shots of Rum and with Matias Pinheiro. And this is her debut feature, although she's made some really interesting shorts, making shorts for a while. And this is set in Senegal. It's a young woman who's kind of beloved disappears one day with the rest of his friends. They get on a boat to go away, and so she's been left behind and having to deal with this waiting. And the film it starts off well. It kind of, it's a real mix of kind of genres. So you have this kind of romantic thing, but then it becomes a lot more almost supernatural, and something does return. And then it gets kind of super kind of interesting. So I think that's another one where we're seeing filmmakers who are either telling very personal or very political stories, but using lots of kind of genre tropes to explore them. In terms of crowd pleasers, I think comedy is, the laugh strand is often one of the hardest for us to program, because obviously with all the strands, we want to be as international as possible. And comedy sometimes travels across nations, and sometimes it's very kind of particular. But our laugh gala this year is, it's just so much fun. So it's a Korean film called The Dude in Me. And
this is the body swap.
Absolutely. So we've got a kind of hardened gangster who's kind of in his 40s, very kind of foul-mouthed, won't let anything kind of stop him from like building his empire. And then after a kind of strange trip to a ramen shop, he has an accident and wakes up in hospital in the body of a teenage boy. So What's really great about this is that the guy who plays the teenager, Jin Young, he's quite a famous kind of K-pop star as well. He manages to be both a teenager and middle-aged gangster simultaneously, where you can't see the joins, and it's really funny, incredible timing, and they make such inventive use of the genre. I mean, it's a genre that's worked for many years across many films, but this is something that I really think in Embankment Garden Cinema, having 800 people all laughing together is going to be amazing.
And I mentioned before that I programmed for BFI Flare, so I feel like I'd be remiss if I wasn't talking about a few of the kind of queer films that we have in the festival, and a couple that I really love and would want to make a quick shout out for. There's one called Two of Us, which is a French film about the... It's a kind of love story between two older women whose lives are kind of torn apart by illness. And it's a really beautiful, smart, moving piece of filmmaking. And I think what it does so beautifully is crosses that balance between being a weepy, something that's going to have you absolutely floored by the end, but being really intelligent and really smart and very thoughtful. It's not emotionally manipulative in the way that it accesses the emotions of the characters and of the audiences. And it's a really, really beautiful piece of filmmaking. And on the reverse of that, from older lesbians to young gay men, we have This Is Not Berlin, which is the story of a young man who discovers the underground club scene in Mexico City in the 1980s. It's a really fast-paced, energetic film about the possibilities of youth and the possibilities of how art and music can open your mind and change your life and, you know, shape your identity when you're a young person.
Great. And finally, guys, I wanted to quickly ask you about LFF's place in the kind of cinematic calendar, like where you think, what sort of role you think the festival has in the kind of the film year, because it comes at kind of sort of towards the end of festival season, just before awards season.
We're in a beautiful place in the calendar because, we can pick and choose from basically all the film festivals from the year. We start our journey at kind of Sundance in Berlin and Rotterdam, and then we can kind of pick all the way through. So it's really lovely to be able to see and choose films and kind of have some of the best films of the year. But increasingly, we're showing films that are very fresh. So we have a lot of world premieres, a lot of European premieres, and it's great in terms of the films that have just got buzz now coming out of Venice and Toronto. And then to be able to launch films is really key as well. I suppose an important thing to say is that, you know, most of the films when we select them do not have any UK distributor. So for many people, it'll be the only chance to see them. And for a lot of those films, if they get good response, then there's more chance they'll get picked up by a distributor. So that's a really key thing. And I think in terms of audiences, premiere status is often not the top thing in their mind. It's just they want the films to be good. And what's maybe, I think we maybe hinted at this already, but this year we have an exceptional number of first and second time features. It's a really fresh selection, and it means that people to some extent will have to be a bit bold in their choices because it'll be by filmmakers they don't know. But we really feel that those are risks worth taking because it's like there's a new generation that's coming through of filmmakers, and obviously we've got established talent as well. But I think it's a great time to be looking at international cinema as it's kind of more diverse and just going to more interesting, bold places.
Great. Michael Blythe, Kate Taylor, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Cheers. Okay, thank you very much, Kate Taylor and Michael Blythe, for coming on the show. Always a pleasure, and really interesting to see how the festival works from the other side of it. And if you manage to get to anything at the London Film Festival this year and want to tell us some of your highlights, you can do so on Twitter, where we are at Curzon Cinemas, or on email, where we are podcast@curzon.com. And when we do our London Film Festival roundup show, we'll read out some of those on the air. And if you want to keep up with what we're watching at the London Film Festival, you can find us on Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Where you are?
I'm there under Kelly P-triple-E.
And I'm there at S_Howlett. So thank you very much for listening. Please remember to rate, review and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And we are available every week on iTunes, Acast or wherever you listen to your regular podcasts. It's goodbye from Kelly.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening.